Accession number 27789, Mr. Bert Wolstenholme, Reel 3. Now, when you got this crew, you know, under Alan Loomis, how did you start? You know, what happened next? Well, anything else happened at the opera at Edge Hill?
No, more or less, I got posted to...
You didn't do any flights then?
No, we went to... trying to think. There was another place you went.
Was it Victory you went to?
It was OTU. Yeah. Oh, I must have been there. This is where I get a little bit confused.
Normally you'd do some flights at the OTU.
Yeah, it was. Australia. We were doing service.
And then you'd go to a thing. I'm not sure about whether the dates aren't all a year later, though. And I'm not sure this is in 43.
I don't think I was 19 when I joined up. I think I was younger than that.
That. Yeah, okay, all right. Because that's what... I'm just worrying.
Yeah, because I was only... No, I don't think I was 19.
Right, so that... Okay, so...
I know all what I've told you is the years.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll carry on. Now, so...
We did circuits and bumps.
Now,
then.
Tell me about the training flights. What were they like, the training flights?
Oh. Well, at first, it took a while because of the different accents. You know, when he was talking to each other, I mean, for obvious, I was Lancashire. You've got a Leicester accent. You had a Cockney accent. You had Skipper came from Suffolk. I mean, Johnny, a Canadian. And it took us a while before we could understand what the hell we were saying on the intercom. And eventually... all these accents came together as one, if you know what I mean. And we just carried on doing circuits and bumps.
What were you doing, which aircraft were you doing it in?
Lancasters. Mark 1s, I think they were.
And what, anything happened in the training flights?
Nothing out of the ordinary I can think of. Oh, except that... when we're doing circuits and bumps, he made one or two bumpy bumps when we come down, because he used to go on a circuit, come round, come down, hit the ground, take off again, you know? And it was quite a while before Skipper got the hang of it, sort of thing, you know. It threw you about quite a bit.
So what happens next then? Anything else you're doing at Edge Hill?
Not a lot, except getting drunk, probably.
where would you go?
Oh, the local pubs. I can't remember the name of the pubs.
That was the main thing. Like, you wouldn't drink in the sergeant's mess so much as...
Oh, yeah, the odd pint or two in the sergeant's mess, you know, but used to go down to the pub. Looking for girls more than anything, to be honest, except for Johnny. He wouldn't.
And anything else you remember about Edge Hill?
Nothing out of the ordinary, no, till we got to Wychford.
Now, who were you joining at Wychford? What was happening there?
Oh, we were drafted into C flight straight away.
And which squadron?
115.
And do you know which group, Bomber Command?
3.
Now, what was your reception when we got to... Wychford, how do you spell Wychford? Is it just as it's as it says, isn't it?
W-I-C-H, no T in it.
And that's in Lincolnshire?
Or Cambridgeshire.
Cambridgeshire, yeah.
Not far from Ely, which is our local pub place.
And what year was this?
43.
And what happened there then?
Well, when we first, we went on doing circuits and bumps for a while, and also we went on, what would you call, I can't think, it was to do with navigation. We used to fly out, come back, and it was a sort of an exercise for the navigator, and on one of them, we flew up towards Suffolk. And he came down pretty low because his mum and dad lived there. And we was that low, we could see mum and dad's washing out in the back garden. This is absolutely true, this. And he flew around like that. Anyway, when we got back, he got a rollicking. Skipper got a rollicking. Because he shouldn't have been there at such an altitude. So, and then just different exercises. And then we started on bombing raids.
We're just looking at the papers, and it's RAF Red Hill is 1943, August and September 1943, and you're mentioned in the crew with Rogers is the bomb aimer.
That's right. Yeah.
But you're flying Wellingtons, Wellington 3s. Oh. You don't remember the Wellington.
Well, obviously, if it's on there, I must have done.
Fair enough. I mean, you know, we
can't. This is where I'm getting a bit confused, I think.
So, then you go to Wychford, Cambridgeshire, yeah. 115 Squadron, and there you're on. So, he also would... That would mean you'd have to go to a heavy conversion.
Conversion, yeah.
But that you don't remember that. That
chipping.
Thing. Did you do two tours with Loomis, or just one?
Just one, yeah. Chipping, Chipping Warden.
Yeah.
Was the HCU, Chipping Warden, I think.
So you did go to an HCU?
Yeah, Chipping Warden. Oh, wait a minute, it's coming back to me a bit now. Yeah, I remember being on Wellington now, the old TU. HCU was at Chipping Warden, I think.
Right. And you see, he's got you in, has been at 115 Squadron at Wychford in April 1945. But do you think...
Oh, well, long before that.
Right, yeah. That's fair enough. Well, we're just going to have to go with what you remember, because there does seem to be some confusion about what's going on, whether the date's right on these. You were on training flights when you joined Wychford.
Yeah, for a while. Yeah.
And then what happened?
And then we went on operations. What was the first camp? Kiel, I think, was the first one. I'm not sure.
Now, what do you remember about your first operation?
Scared to death.
Should we take it right through? What a typical operation. Was it a typical enough operation? Because we could take it right through from when you first hear about it to what goes right on.
What? My own personal feelings, you
Well,
mean?
It's when. How would you first know about the operation? How would you first know you were going that night?
Oh, you were called into briefing at 2 o'clock. And you're given a briefing. And took off about 7 o'clock.
Now, what was the briefing like?
Well, you had different blokes coming in. You had the chap telling you all about the weather, what you're likely to meet. Another chap was telling you what sort of resistance you're likely to meet, i.e. night fighters, flak, and etc. And then just a morale-boosting bloke, the commander. And... Because we used to say, it's all right for him, he's not going. You know. But it was all the things to do with going on an operation.
And then what would happen after that?
Well, after 2 o'clock, then you're going to have something to eat.
Now, that'd be an aircrew meal. What would that be? Was it a special meal or...? Was it like the breakfast you got when you got back? Or
no, breakfast when we got back, we had egg and bacon. Which the civilians didn't get. So where they come back.
Well, what about on that meal?
What, about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock-ish.
The one when you're going out?
Oh, that was just usually the usual thing, like...
So nothing special about that?
No, nothing special.
So what would you do after the meal?
Lounge about a bit and went and get kitted up. Wait for the lorries to come.
Now, Kitty, now, what would you wear in the air? Tell us exactly what your flying kit was. Now, we've just checked through this, and we want to change the dates because it is apparent that you were at Edge Hill, which is a satellite of 12 OTU, in 1944, from August through to September. Then you went to the main station of 12 OTU at Chipping Warden. You're all, because you're actually mentioned in the cruise. These are the papers, these are the excerpts from the flying logbook of Loomis. And then you're at Wolford Lodge 1651 Heavy Conversion Unit. That's where you convert to Lancaster. Now, you don't remember that at all. At Woolfox Lodge, 1651 Heavy Conversion Unit.
You've been named there, was it?
Well, no, not for that one, but it's Loomis. 24th of February, 45, he's at there. And then he joins 115 Squadron at Wychford, and your name is on there. And the first raid is on Kiel on the 9th of April.
Must be then, yeah.
So, but you remember that your tour being ended by the end of the war. So,
oh, yes.
Well, in that case, it's 40. It must be 45 because that's when the war ended. So, we will sort of change our set. Now, let's go back to discussing this typical raid. So, now, when you kitted out, what would you wear? What was your flying kit?
Well, starting from the feet upwards, you had a pair of silk stockings. Well, not stockings, socks. Then you had ordinary socks, and then your flying boots. And then you had sort of long johns underneath your trousers, coming upwards now. You had the vest, your shirt, and your flying jacket. Then you had silk gloves, woolen gloves, and your gauntlets. And that was, what else? Nothing else, is it?
And what about on your head? That's very,
oh, just your helmet when you're flying.
At all.
With your intercom on, yeah.
And your oxygen.
Oh, yeah.
Now, so you get your flying kit, what happens then?
You pick up your flying kit, then you jump in the old truck, and you go out to dispersal. And your KO dog, or whatever, well, KO dog was most of ours, we had others as well, but KO dog was waiting there for you. And you all sort of piled in. I got in my little space. I made 11:55 till I met the receiver. A little Morse key here. My little space, well, I think.
And would you check your equipment, or had it already been checked?
Oh no, I had to go out. I had to go down to the accumulate place and get me 7-volt accumulator. Funny enough, the old worked up accumulator. And he did a bit of a test thing with the intercom. All the crew checking the intercom together. And
you're checking your equipment.
Yeah, and then you just waited while they brought the trolley arc up. No, big trolley arc.
What's that?
Oh, like a big trolley with great big accumulators in to start the engines. And then we used to hear skipper say, port in, port out, starboard in, starboard out, and away they'd go. And then he come out from your dispersal, you taxi round, nose to tail, all one behind the other, and then when you got to the runway, he's with a little wooden up there, and when it was your turn, he's put his green light on, and off you went. And that's when you used to get I used to get jitters a bit then.
How nervous did you get?
Pretty nervous, yeah. We had a saying in the area, we used to call it a ring twitch. When it used to start at the bottom of your spine and work its way up your back. That's how it got called a ring twitch. In fact, in different blocks, in different ways. I used to get a bit nervous as soon as I saw that green light. I used to get a little bit nervous then. And I was alright once I got in the air. And it never bothered me then until I heard the navigator saying approaching coast of France, and I used to get a few more twitches. And the next time I got a twitch was coming out of the bombing area.
So where were you going? I would say the Kiel raid you did, that's on the 9th of April.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that? So the flight out. The flight out. What do you remember about the flight out? What was it like for you? What, you know, in the airplane, what was it like?
Well, I was too busy listening to, for headquarters, in case there was any message come, you know, to abort or whatever, which it happened when we went to Cologne. But that was my main job, was listening. It was full of static, obviously. And I used to try and pick up the beam from England, and it was WT silence all the way, unless there was an emergency.
So you wouldn't be transmitting at all?
No, WT silence. And we used to, well, I didn't, but Bob Amy used to do it. He'd chuck window out. As we went over the coast of France, he'd chuck this window out, which was different piece lengths and thicknesses of silver paper, which distorted their radar. They thought it was more than what it was.
So what happened next then? So you go, you know, where you're going to Kiel, say?
Yeah. Well, he used to hear the navigator saying 2 minutes to ETA. Then next one you heard was the bomb aimer saying either left, right, steady, and bomb's gone, and the old aircraft used to lift up in the air a bit because less weight. And you were bombing on markers at the time,
Pathfinder markers.
Yeah.
What could you see of them? Or could you see anything of them from where you were?
Yeah, in a little window I could see it a lot from where I was. It was making me nervous.
Was there much flak?
Oh, and yeah, quite a bit.
What was it like, the anti-aircraft fire?
Can you imagine floating like that and somebody goes like that, hits you underneath? If there was one a bit near, the old aircraft used to go up a bit. And he could smell the cordite as well, inside the aircraft. And they were pretty near.
Any German night fighters, or are they mostly gone by then? I mean, it was late on.
I don't recollect seeing any night fighters then.
Now, one thing I should have asked, did you have you had WT silence. Did your pilot have any policy about using the intercom, because some crews used to chatter, some crews don't?
Oh no, Skipper, when a navigator used to say 2 minutes to target, or, you know, well, we were disciplined, you don't say nothing. We used to chatter before then, for obvious reasons, but the minute you heard that, everything went quiet, because Skipper instilled in us that as we're approaching the bombing run, quit talking, you know. And, you know, you had to avoid the searchlights as well. He used to, what did he used to call it? When he used to go like that, like that, to miss the searchlights.
Corkscrewing?
Corkscrewing, I couldn't think of that word.
What was that? Explain that a bit more. What was it like when he corkscrew?
Well, you sort of went down to port, and then you went down to starboard. Then he went sort of up again, sort of thing. In other words, where the lights were coming out, you were dodging them, trying to dodge them. You know?
What was it like in the aeroplane?
Pretty rough.
Were you strapped in, or were you just sitting there?
No, just sitting there.
So would you get thrown about?
It wasn't comfortable.
What about you?
It was on, not that one, a Gelsenkirchen. It was when we were bombing Gelsenkirchen, bombing the coking plants there. That was at Gelsenkirchen. And we had a pretty rough ride on that one. I'll tell you in a minute. You found it. Is it in there? Gelsenkirchen.
Not yet. Tell us about that one anyway. What happened then?
Well, we were supposed to be bombing the coking plant and the ball bearing plants there. And we just dropped our bombs and was coming out. And I'm sat here, and this is God's honest truth. There used to be the bulkhead door here.
On your right?
Yeah. I heard a noise, but what happened, I used to have a little doll, a masker. It was a sailor's suit with a pot head sort of thing. And this fell on the floor. I used to have it on the side of my transmitter. This fell on the floor, and I bent down to pick it up like that, and I heard this noise, didn't know what it was, because that much noise went from the flat. Next thing I knew, another corner of my transmitter was like that, and a big piece of that flew off the corner, and there was a hole above me. And what happened, a piece of shrapnel had come through on my right hand side, about here, just beyond the door, and it shot straight across, hit me my transmitter and went out through the roof. And if I'd have been in my normal position where I would have been, only for this doll dropping, I expect the side of my head had been taken out with a piece of shrapnel.
That was on the
Gelsenkirchen.
It looks like a raid on 5th of March. I've actually just found another page of the report. They're all jumbled up, so it looks like you started in March or earlier, a bit earlier in 45.
No, the Gelsenkirchen, definitely.
So, now, anything else? So, after you've dropped the bombs, you'd fly back. Anything different about the flight back?
I used to hear the skipper say, right lad, let's sod off home. Or was that effect a bit stronger than that? But as soon as we got over the coast of France, he used to come right low. He wasn't supposed to do. And it was that low over the channel that I used to hear Bill say, "Skipper, my bloody feet are getting wet." You know, and then he'd come up over the cliffs, you know, and away back to base.
Now, when you landed, what would happen when you landed?
I'm not sure whether it was that trip.
But generally, what would happen?
Well, once we couldn't get back. Couldn't get the wheels down. So we was diverted to... Where's that place I told you? Where we went to the wedding? Something Wood. It was an American base, anyway.
And what happened?
We couldn't get the wheels down. The hydraulics had been shot up. Couldn't get them down. And we had to go to Woodgate, was it? Is it Woodgate?
Wood? Doesn't matter much. What happened?
Well, we had to land at this American drone. And we had to belly flop there. So we had to take up crash positions. And I climbed over the bulkhead door and lied flat on the floor. And when we came in, there must have been a bit of a crosswind because it turned us over. And I remember going up, seeing the ceiling and coming down. And I must have caught my face on something up the side of me. And it cut me across my nose. I still got the scar here. And I must have blacked out, but coming to, I could see the there was Andy's face and Johnny, and they were saying to me, "All right." I could hear these boys saying, "All right," because there was blood everywhere. And apart from that, I just had the cut, and it was just bleeding, and none of us was hurt apart from me.
And had the wheel? Had it been an actual crash landing?
No, he was sort of coming in like that. He had no wheels, and this crosswind must have caught the starboard wing and turned us right over like that. But apart from me, nobody else was hurt, and the American doctor there, he stitched my nose up. I don't know if you can see it, there's a white mark there.
There is, on the bridge of your, just about between your eyes.
Well, he stitched it up, and I always remember looking like a cat with bloody whiskers on. Because it was stick, them days, it was the old catgut. And they took us back, after that, they took us back to the squadron in American, one American trucks, you know. And then we took another aircraft when we got back.
Now, you said one raid was aborted. Hang on, let's do the debriefing first. What about debriefing? What was the debriefing?
Well, you all went to your different sections. I went to the wireless operators, bomb aimers to theirs, navigators to theirs. And you were asked different questions. What was the, you know, how much flak and all the general things about what happened on the trip. And I had to tell about my watch name being knocked out, my transmitter, on that particular time. And it was just general information, what you experienced going and coming back. And then you all went together in one crew, and the crew was again interrogated by this bloke, right, you know, this bod, and mostly it was the skipper that had to answer a lot of the questions then, and because it was then that I started smoking, because they used to have a big wooden box with all fags in it, help yourself. I never smoked, but I took one of these out, and they used to give us a mug of tea with a drop of rum in it. And I can always remember it used to be like that. And it took
your hand was shaking.
Yeah, it took quite a while. It's like the after effects, you know what I mean? And after a couple of hours it'd leave you, and you all went back to your billets then, more or less, and just waited. They got stuck into your breakfast.
Your crew breakfast.
Yeah.
Now, was that a big special thing? You know, I mean, having bacon and eggs.
Well, it was, because the general public, they had pounded egg, didn't they? They couldn't have fresh eggs.
One egg a week.
And bacon was rationed, wasn't it?
Now, what did you do in between missions?
Went down to the town. This is where I've got a funny story for you. Well, two funny stories, really.